Welcome back, everybody, to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks Podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, my co-host, Bruce Gunther. Bruce, what's going on?
Hello, everybody.
So again, it's so odd because usually there's four of us and now
there's only two.
The last two episodes have just been the two of us. So John's still not feeling well. And just given the timing of the recording, it didn't work for Tyler. So anyway, today we're going to call this a bonus episode. We're bringing Mike McLaughlin on from Left Wing Lock. He's going to go over some fantasy hockey stats 101 and some players to look out for in season, evaluating players, some really interesting stuff. Hey, Bruce.
Definitely. I learned a lot just listening to him talk. I have to go do a deep dive on the site now just to check it all out.
And of course, get your draft kit because lots of really valuable information in there. He's a really interesting guy too, just his background. He's a scientist. He's got a PhD in physics, I think it was. So very, very intelligent guy. Had lots of really insightful things to say. I'm looking forward to the interview for our listeners. I think they'll get a lot out of it.
Definitely. Most definitely. You can get this one in before you start doing your final drafts here because season starts Monday?
Wednesday. Next Wednesday, the season starts. I think it's the first game. Yeah. So
get a listen to this in before if you're doing any final drafting this weekend, it'll be well worth the listen.
Yeah. So we'll try and get this out, if not today, tomorrow sort of thing. And for our listeners, hope you enjoy it. Hope you learned something. Hopefully you haven't gone through your fantasy hockey drafts already. If you did, you know there's some stuff in here that's going to apply to in-season evaluation of players as well. So no worries that way.
Definitely.
But with that, Bruce, should we send it over to the episode?
For sure.
Okay. Enjoy, guys. Okay, guys, joining us today, we have a very special guest, Mike Laughlin from Left Wing Lock. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate it. For myself personally, I've been a reader of your content for quite some time. Bruce, I'm not sure if you're as familiar with Left Wing Lock, but a lot of good stuff there, a lot of detailed information to help fantasy managers throughout the season. I guess I'll just do a quick intro here. Mike is he's originally from Philadelphia, and he's been a hockey fan most of his life. Mike, your playing history is limited to street hockey, you mentioned, which...
I took a errant stick to the face, right above the eye, and
yikes!
That ended my career pretty quickly.
Not ideal. Well, it says here you mentioned you have a background in math and physics, and you founded Left Wing Lock in 2006. You're currently working as a scientist, and this is a side project for you. So I was not aware. I mean, just based on the site itself and the information you're putting out there on a regular basis, I would have assumed you were doing this full time. But maybe you just tell us, how did you get into, where did the idea for Left Wing Lock come from?
Yeah, so Left Wing Lock came out, as you said, in 2006, and there were really two main things that had me jump into making a site for fantasy hockey. The first one is trivial, but a little bit funny. At the time, there were really very few places to get data on starting goalies and line combos. And one of the main sites at that time, which is actually not around any longer, they had this strange advertisement on their website where this little buzzing mosquito would kind of follow you around the screen as you moved your mouse. And so it was very awkward to try to use that website because you go there, you want to get the goalies, and all of a sudden this mosquito is buzzing in the background and it's flying across your screen and you're like, what's going on? And it was constant. It was just, and this is 2006, yeah. So it was before a lot of the ad blockers had gotten sophisticated. And sure. So that was a little bit of the motivation. I was like, I can't stand this mosquito. I don't know why that is such a trivial idea, but it was really annoying.
Sure.
But probably the more interesting thing to me from a fantasy hockey perspective that had me start the website and get into making draft kits was in 2006, the Ottawa Senators were facing a choice on defense, and they didn't know, or they were at least thinking about which defenseman to keep. Was it going to be Wade Redden or Zdeno Chara? And just by coincidence, I had both of those defensemen on my fantasy hockey team that year, and I was only allowed to keep one defenseman in this particular keeper league.
Right.
And, in hindsight, everyone already knows what the answer should be. But In 2006, it was much less obvious, and Wade Redden was actually a very good fantasy hockey defenseman.
Sure.
And so I looked around for information on which defenseman to keep, and I couldn't find anything that pushed me in the right direction. And, it, you know, with a lack of information, I just decided, well, the Ottawa Senators will know what to do. If they choose a player, it's because he's the better defenseman.
Right.
And they chose Wade Redden, and Zdeno Chara went on to become, you know, the defenseman for the Boston Bruins as a free agent. And for about one season, I didn't look like an idiot. And because Wade Redden was still a good player. And we all know how that turned out. If you're a little bit new to fantasy hockey, maybe you don't. Wade Redden ended up in the AHL. His contract was buried. There were some personal issues for him that contributed to that. And then Zdeno Chara went on to be probably one of the most dominant defensemen in fantasy hockey for the next decade. And I had to listen to my little brother laugh at me every year as he got to keep Chara. And I was looking for replacements for Wade Redden.
Oh, man. So
that was the key motivator. Like, I wanted to know, how do you know which player to keep? It was a simple question, and it didn't seem to have a very good answer back then.
Okay. So that was sort of the genesis of Left Wing Lock.
That's right. That's right.
That's a really interesting story, and I actually recall that all too well because Wade Redden is from around where I kind of grew up and went to high school in Lloydminster. And he's from just nearby there. So I remember watching those games fairly closely and following up on the situation, knowing he signed a big contract and then got moved to the AHL not long after. Right. So
yeah, that's right.
Really unfortunate actually, but okay. Well, that's cool. That's a neat story. I like that a lot. Maybe tell our listeners a little bit about that draft kit, about Left Wing Lock. I mean, what makes the site unique? What makes the draft kit unique? I've purchased it myself. I think it's a great draft kit, but in your own words, you know, what's it all about?
Okay, so if you're coming to the website, the main idea behind the website is to provide you with roster information to help you set your lineup today. And so there's two major tools at the heart of the website, and it's the starting goalies tool and the line combinations tool. So if you're looking for what do I need to do tonight for my fantasy team, that's what I think the website excels at. And then the draft kit itself is something that's useful as you're getting ready for the season coming up. And so what we do is you come to our site and you enter your scoring details for your fantasy hockey league into our system. And then we use our projections and we kind of marry them to your scoring settings to generate a list of customized player rankings that we hope will help you win your league.
Okay. And you've had some success with that. You've been in some expert leagues and things like that too. I'm just basing this off what I read on your website. Maybe tell us a bit about the success you've had there in some expert leagues.
Yeah. So every couple of years we try to do something, you know, something with a twist with our draft kit. And so one year we joined the NHL.com had set up a league where they wanted to have experts versus fans. And so they had their team of experts. All of them were in the league. It was a 16-team league. And we joined the league as fans. We just wanted to see how we could do with our draft kit. Yeah. And we stuck to the draft kit loyally. We just, you know, we set it up for that particular scoring system. It was the Yahoo default scoring system at the time.
Yeah.
Again, there were 16 managers, and we went in there, and it went very well for us. We actually ended up winning that particular league against the NHL.com team. So we were happy with that. And then last year, we did something kind of neat. We called it a zero transaction league. We joined just a regular public Yahoo default league with, you know, 11 other random managers. And we just put some conditions on ourselves. The conditions were we had to use the Left Wing Lock Draft Kit as our research tool in advance of the draft, and only the Left Wing Lock Draft Kit. And then once the draft was over, we were not allowed to make a single transaction throughout the entire season.
Interesting.
No ads, no drops, no trades. No, we couldn't even put a player on injured reserve.
No way.
And that worked out. Again, it was a shortened season, so we're willing to admit that we probably got some good luck on our side. Had it gone 82 games, it might have been a different outcome. But for the shortened season, we ended up winning that rotisserie league without making a single transaction.
Wow.
And again, I attribute that to the draft kit, because that was the only tool or move we could use. And all that happened, I guess, since it was a late year, all that happened in January.
So. Right. Okay. So for anyone wondering, where can they find the draft kit? What's the website? What's the URL?
Okay. So if you just go to leftwinglock.com and then /draft kits.
Okay. Perfect. And then where can they find you guys on social media?
On social media, our Twitter account is @left_wing_lock.
Okay. Perfect. Well, hey guys, go check that out. Like I said, I've purchased the kit myself. There's some really good stuff in there. I find it very interesting. I don't know, Bruce, you know, I don't think I could get through the whole season without making a transaction. I'd probably go crazy.
I can't get through the first week without making a transaction.
No, I can't.
I was so nervous in late April, because we fell behind to the second place team for about a 2 week period after Steven Stamkos got injured. We had Stamkos on our roster. And so for about 2 weeks, we were really, you know, sweating it out there. And every morning I wanted to replace Stamkos. I just wanted, if I could just get one player, we knew he'd win. It was very difficult to resist.
Well, good for you guys. It sounds like you've had some real success using that draft kit. And for our listeners, please do check it out. Like I said, I can't recommend it enough. How many writers and contributors do you guys have for Left Wing Lock? Is it just yourself? Do you have a few other people that are helping with content and programming, stuff like that?
Yeah. At this time, we're up to 5 contributors.
Oh, wow.
A few of us wear a lot of hats, and then there's a couple of us who have very specific roles. For instance, we have one guy who's just kind of dedicated to our iPhone app.
Right.
But yeah, there's a few of us who play a role in updating the goalies throughout the day, updating the line combos throughout the day, doing some of the technological stuff, you know, in the database and such.
Yeah. Interesting. Are you guys all from the Philadelphia area, or kind of spread out? How does that work for you guys?
Pretty spread out. One of the guys is my brother. So we're both from Pennsylvania. We have a guy from Finland. He does all of our design work. But yes, pretty spread out at this point.
That's really interesting. It's amazing what technology can help you accomplish, eh?
That's right.
All right. So what's your favorite fantasy format? Do you enjoy season-long redraft stuff, head-to-head, points, categories, keepers, dynasties, DFS? What do you like to play personally?
I would say my favorite really is just kind of a very standard rotisserie league, one-year league.
Okay. Just because of the redraft perspective or what's it about?
Yeah, that? I like the redraft. I like the rotisserie format. It reduces the amount of luck that's brought about by having, you know, the schedule of a head-to-head league.
Right.
There's probably nothing more frustrating in fantasy hockey than, you know, playing 24, 25 weeks and being first or second place, and then coming down to a 1 or 2 week semifinal and, you know, your guys just don't show up.
Yep.
Yep.
Bruce, you know all about that.
Last year. Oh.
Mike, he's got PSD. Poor Bruce. Last season you were so close. He had a great year, and then basically your team fizzled out 1 week in the semis, and that was it.
The semifinal, my team have just disappeared for that week, and then
That's brutal. That's tough.
You're preaching to the choir, Mike. Bruce understands for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I guess in that same vein, what fantasy hockey platform do you prefer? You know, there's Yahoo, ESPN, Fantrax. There's lots out there. What's your preference?
Yeah, I've tried those three major ones, and the one I keep coming back to is Yahoo. I like the site layout. They always seem to have all of the players in their system. For instance, this is a minor quibble, but like Dmitry Yaskin is not in the ESPN system right now.
Right.
Just, you know, 1 week ahead of the season starting. But probably the most important feature for me at this point is the app for Yahoo, I think, is just superior. And so it just makes setting your roster so easy on a daily basis, which for me, you know, you would think I run a fantasy hockey site, I'd never forget to set my roster. It's the exact opposite. It's not that I don't want to set my roster. It's that I'm so busy between 6:30 and 7 o'clock looking for last-minute goalies and line combinations to update that it's the last thing on my mind. So 6:58 p.m., you know, on the East Coast, I need to be able to open that Yahoo app, you know, punch in the starters and go.
So there's probably – I was going to say, there's probably a couple of coaches out there that drive you nuts, hey? I mean, Barry Trotz and some of the guys that
– Barry Trotz is bad. Detroit's kind of weird about that.
Yeah.
And then you even have some West Coast issues where, you know, for a while the L.A. Kings were tough. And now Anaheim, there's one beat writer for the Anaheim Ducks who is – she's very good about getting the starting goalie at like 32 minutes before the game starts.
Right.
So,
that's frustrating. I think we all struggle with that, right? But thankfully, we've got sites like yours that can help keep everybody up to date. So it's definitely appreciated. So we talked a bit about expert leagues. Are you in any expert leagues this year or real competitive leagues?
Nothing at the time, actually. I mean, I guess I have a week left before I jump into something. But right now, most of my leagues for this season are just kind of friends and family things that have been going on for a few years.
All the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, let's maybe get into some fantasy hockey strategy. You know, this episode may or may not reach listeners before their drafts occur. We've got, you know, the season starting next Wednesday. We're a week away, so we'll see. But just, you know, from your perspective, what is the perfect draft look like? It doesn't have to be real specific, but maybe just if you can go sort of, you know, round or not round by round, but just, you know, kind of how would you approach a draft?
So one of my main things I like to do is, I mean, I'm religious about preparing for a draft. I think people on average kind of wait too late to get ready for a draft. And so they're kind of scrambling maybe in the last day or two to get a plan together. And the real problem with that is when you're in the draft and something goes wrong. You know, somebody takes your player in the first round, or somebody takes your favorite goalie in round four. And I think if you lack preparation before the draft, that's when those kind of things really hit you the hardest.
Sure.
And there's nothing worse than having 1 minute to make your pick and the guy before you takes the player you had your eyes on.
Bruce.
Never.
I would say the thing I like to do to at least make me feel good about a draft is for at least a few rounds, and if not several, I like to have multiple players on my list for that pick in advance of the draft.
Right.
You know, so if you, let's say you're picking fifth overall in the draft, I would like to have that number five pick. I want to have, you know, probably three names locked in that I know I'll get one of them.
Yeah.
Like you just have to know. You can't – your first round pick cannot be a guess. You know, it cannot be – you cannot be flustered in the first round because you're doomed. And so for me, it's preparation. I want to be prepared in multiple rounds, maybe through round six or seven if I can, to where I have three to four reasonable names at each one of those picks. And kind of hand in hand with that is – I want to know in advance which players I should avoid.
Right.
And by avoid, I don't mean that they're bad players. I mean that they are going to be picked too early by other managers. And just to kind of give you a concrete example of that, just to get a feel for what I mean here is, for instance, Cale Makar, who I think is going to be a great – obviously, he's going to be a great defenseman. He's going to be a fantasy hockey stud this year.
For sure.
The problem is everybody wants him, and somebody in almost every draft is going to overpay for him.
Yep.
And so part of my preparation in the draft isn't necessarily to scratch his name off the list, but it's basically to say, I'm not going to get him. I need a better plan for my first defenseman that I pick, because if I want Makar, I'm going to have to get him a couple of picks before his value truly kicks in. And when you start doing that too many times in a draft, that leads to an imperfect draft.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's a great example because he's going quite early. I think, Bruce, you said you would even maybe not hesitate to grab in the first round. Like you're pretty high in Makar for next year. But Yeah, for you want to try and find value, right? As much as you can in the draft.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
And you're right, Cam Makar, I think this morning he's sitting at 13.3, which is the highest ADP of a defenseman in years. Yeah. I think Brent Burns came in at 12.9 several years ago.
Yeah.
But I believe that was when he was seeing a little bit of time at right wing as well.
Yeah, he kind of had that dual eligibility, and he was putting up 70 or 80 points a season, scoring and 300-plus shots, right? Like he was...
Oh, yeah, the shot totals were incredible for him.
Yeah, he was. It's really too bad what's gone on there in San Jose. He was just a monster of a defenseman, and now he's almost an afterthought at this point. But
his shooting at even strength has gone downhill. It's dropped almost 50% over the last 4 years.
Wow, yeah, that's concerning if you're a Sharks fan and if you're thinking about drafting Brent Burns. But what else do I have? excuse me. We've been talking a lot about 0G draft strategy. So I'd love to pick your brain on goaltenders and kind of where you select them. Do you have any thoughts on the 0G draft strategy?
I've never really employed it like that specific strategy myself. But I do see the merit of it because there's so much variability with goaltenders in these fantasy leagues. Had you told me ahead of last season that Carter Hart would be one of the worst goalies in the league, I wouldn't have believed you. There's nothing in the data that would have suggested that.
Yeah.
And if you drafted him early last year, and he was an early ADP last year, your fantasy team was decimated. Like you were in bad shape, and it got worse as the year went on. So I definitely see merit in waiting on goalies. And, I think that kind of ties into having a good strategy in advance of a draft. Last season, one of my major targets in all my drafts was Philip Grubauer on Colorado. His ADP, I don't have it off the top of my head, but it was actually pretty late last year. We had him ranked as like a third or fourth top goalie in the league in advance of the drafts. And we got him in every draft we wanted. I think finding those kind of goalies is a great maybe alternative strategy to, kind of going with the 0G. It's just being able to find maybe one or two guys that just everyone else doesn't like for whatever reason. And I think, maybe one example of that this year is probably Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thank you, Bruce. Mike, I've been banging the drum about Tristan Jarry for the last 4 weeks, and everyone else on the podcast thinks I'm nuts. But please elaborate.
Yeah, so I think Tristan Jarry is a pretty nice pick this year. I know there's going to be some problems early on in Pittsburgh because the Crosby's probably going to miss a week. Malkin looks like he's going to be out until sometime in December. But this is still a solid team, and Crosby's only going to miss 1 week. So you're looking at a team that's missing one very good player, but they still have Gensel, Rust, they have Chris Letang. This is a playoff bound team, and I think Tristan Jarry is a good goalie, and his ADP right now is 115. What's that? That's probably like approximately a 10th rounder or so.
10 through 12 somewhere is probably where you'll find him, right?
Yeah, so you don't have to spend much to get Jarry this year. I'm not saying jump in round 3 for him or something, but if you get Jarry in round 10 and the Pittsburgh Penguins are in the playoffs, you're set. You just got incredible fantasy value out of a late round goalie draft pick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Tristan Jarry just like you said for that value. Even Carter Hart this year, as you'd mentioned or alluded to, like his ADP now is down to 129.5. So he's going even later than Jarry. And he should bounce back. I mean, do you believe he's going to bounce back this season?
I do tremendously. One of the stats we'll talk about in this episode is the penalty kill save percentage. So I'm going to jump ahead of myself, I guess, for a second and just point out that for Carter Hart, his save percentage while he was on the penalty kill – or sorry, rather, while Philadelphia was on the penalty kill, was, I think it was 0.7. Let's see, I have it written down. 0.783. As a reference, the league average on that stat is 0.865.
Oh, wow.
So, and again, what we know about penalty kill save percentage is that no goalie, not Luongo, not Brodeur, not Patrick Waugh, no goalie is good or bad at the penalty kill.
Right.
If they face enough shots, they all end up in the same place near the end of their career, and that's 0.865. And so this is a huge indicator that Carter Hart is going to have a strong rebound this season.
Okay, good stuff. I like to know that. He's actually a guy, he's on my list for goalies that I like to target at some point in the draft. I don't want to get too much into goaltending. Could you give us your quick thoughts on Thatcher Demko? Like, he had kind of a rough year last year with COVID and things like that. Is he another goaltender that you see potentially bouncing back next year?
I do. And that's because I see Vancouver as a whole kind of coming back. When they lost Pettersson, so many things for their team just went downhill. And one of the primary problems they had was being able to score on the power play without Pettersson. And I think that ties into Demko's ability to generate wins in a fantasy league.
Right.
So yeah, I like him too. He's another guy who has an average draft position that's very close to Jari in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I had him here for a second. I've lost him now. 102.2, so just a little bit earlier than Tristan Jari, but still pretty good value if you can get him in the 9th or 10th round, I'd say.
That's right.
One more question on goaltending. What did you make of the Dallas Stars situation? I mean, obviously they've got 4 goaltenders there. It's a bit of a mess. What should fantasy owners be doing in terms of that situation? I mean, I'm saying maybe avoid it, but what are your thoughts?
I think that's a reasonable strategy. Sometimes in fantasy hockey, there just isn't a straight answer to what's going to happen with a team.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means the risk is just too high. And you're right. This situation's very strange. They have 4 goalies on their roster, 4 NHL caliber goalies on their roster. And, you know, Bishop is practicing. He's involved with the preseason. The only thing he hasn't done is he has not played any preseason game. And if you look at Dallas's salary cap situation, I believe they have no choice but to put him on long-term injured reserve when the season begins, because they're about $4 million over the cap right now. And his salary conveniently fixes that. I think it's 4.9.
Okay.
And, you know, unless they make some serious trade that we haven't heard any rumors about, I think Bishop has to go on LTIR. And then you're left with Khudobin and Holtby, who's actually been kind of impressive in the preseason so far.
Yep.
And then Jake Ettinger or Ottinger. I always pronounce these names.
I think it's Ottinger, but I'm not totally sure on that. So
okay, so Jake Ottinger, who appears to be an NHL level goalie, like he was very solid last season, but he's the only one of those 4 goalies who is eligible to pass through waivers, to not need waivers to go back to the AHL. And so right now, the only thing that makes sense to me, even though it's not what I would do if I were a coach or a general manager, the only thing that kind of makes sense with all these goalies floating around is Bishop to LTIR, Khudobin and Holtby as your 1 and 2. And then Ottinger gets all the playing time in the AHL to develop.
Yeah. Rightly or wrongly, right? I mean, he Ottinger, like exactly. You said, is an NHL caliber goaltender, but he's just, because of the math, he's got to go down.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that's the risk in drafting these guys from Dallas, is if we don't really know what's going to happen. That's what I feel is going to happen. What makes it all kind of a little bit heartbreaking is that the Dallas goalies usually have very nice goals against averages.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're thinking about avoiding them because the situation is risky, but whoever does pick the right goalie in their fantasy draft is probably going to get a nice return.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. They're a good defensive team, and they've got Heiskanen locked up long term. And they got lots to like there in Dallas. It's just unfortunate we don't know exactly what's going to go down. So, could you provide our listeners with some of your early mock draft observations? What are you kind of seeing in terms of value picks or players with inflated ADPs? Anyone that's being overlooked later in drafts?
Sure, I can definitely do that. I've got a few players I wrote down earlier today. Some of the ones I like that are what I consider good value players. These are players who their ADP is a little bit later than where our system ranks them. And okay. So a few of those players would be Dylan Larkin out of Detroit. We like Patrick Laine in Columbus. His ADP is ridiculous. I don't know what it is this morning, but I wish I could pull it up real quick, but it's probably like 120, 130. It's very late. And I'm not
129. Sorry, Mike. 129.1. This is ADP.
Okay, perfect. Well, I just don't think that number makes any sense. To draft him that late, you really have to believe that the Patrick Laine you saw in Columbus last season is the real Laine. And everything he did in Winnipeg was a mirage.
And probably not.
I don't think that's the reality. Now, is he going to repeat what he did in Winnipeg? Maybe, maybe not. I can't promise that. But I don't think the picture from Columbus last season is the real Laine. And so yeah. I think there's some nice value in drafting him this year, for certain. Out of Ottawa, Drake Batherson is looking kind of like a neat player to pick up late.
Yep, I would agree.
He's going to get some nice even strength time on ice, and I believe he contributes pretty prominently in the hit category.
Yep.
If your league counts hits, some guys near the top of the draft who you know. People may overlook these guys because, you know, these are big names and, of course, you want to draft them early. These are a few guys who I think have good value, and yet they're still ranked pretty high by all the major systems. Alexander Barkov, for instance, out of Florida. I think there's some good value there. You can get him maybe about a round, approximately a round of value in there. Steven Stamkos perennially now for, you know, past couple seasons. Just because he's had some of those injuries that have caused him to miss time over the years, he always gets devalued heading into drafts.
Yeah.
And so if you're willing to take that risk on a guy who is really a top 5 point generator, I mean, just he's incredible, I think, and especially on the power play.
Yeah.
If you're willing to take that risk, you can get him at value this year. Alex DeBrincat at Chicago, mm-hmm. there's some nice value. Drafting him this season.
Yeah, I like to bring it for next season too. I'll just ask you quickly. A lot of people have been talking about DeBrincat and Gensel going. They're going right around the same ADP. So in your mind, I mean, and the argument for taking DeBrincat over Gensel is that Crosby and Malkin are hurt right now. So, you know, in your opinion, which player would you be looking at and why?
I would be looking at DeBrincat. And in fact, I would actually be taking him even if Crosby and Malkin had no injuries.
Right.
I just like him a little bit better in fantasy systems this season. Okay. I think he's got a higher ceiling than Gensel at this point.
Yeah, I'd be on board with that for sure. He scores goals in his sleep. The guy is, and he's playing next to Kane, right? So
it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, he actually, I think his performance last year was a little bit boosted by luck, but even after we adjusted for that, and try to bring him back toward the norm, his projection still comes out amazing. He's just a solid pickup in fantasy hockey.
Okay, good stuff. Quickly back to Dylan Larkin too, just before we move on. Do you have any concerns around that player given the team environment? I mean, obviously, you know Tyler Bertuzzi is going to miss a little bit of time. They lost Jacob Verana, which is a big loss. You know, do you have any concerns about drafting Dylan Larkin for this season?
I'm not too concerned about drafting Larkin. I think his numbers, his bad luck from last season, the strength of that bad luck was, you know, so high that I think he's due for a rebound no matter what happens.
Okay.
One thing I don't like about drafting Detroit players in general is the Detroit coach, he will not keep lines together. I don't have an easy way to say that. You know, if you look at teams like the Boston Bruins and you've got, you know, Bergeron, Marchand, and Pastrnak, if you look at how often they're on a line together throughout the season, it's a very high number.
Yeah.
Like they're almost never separated. I think Pastrnak saw a little bit of time on the right wing on line 2 last year. And you can usually use a team's top line as an indication of how often coaches will keep them together, how often coaches will keep all four lines together, rather. And if you do that for Detroit, it's a disaster. It's Blashill, right? I guess in Detroit is the name of the coach. And he will not keep lines together. And I think it's a problem.
For sure it is.
You know, at some point you want to play with the same two guys, right? Like, yep. You want to know who's going to be passing you the puck. You want to know who's going to be going into the corners to go dig that puck out. You know, how does this guy play around the net? Things like that. And if that's changing on a weekly basis, like it does in Detroit, I can see why it would cause the problems. Cause a little bit of frustration for some of the players. So that is one reservation I have about Detroit forwards. But I do like Dylan Larkin as a late pick in drafts this year.
Okay. Any other value picks you had in mind there before we move on?
One more guy, and this is kind of this sort of relies on leagues where you count faceoff wins. I like Elias Lindholm out of Calgary.
Okay.
He can pick up some nice faceoff numbers, and he's always eligible on the wing in the Yahoo fantasy hockey system.
Yeah,
and so he makes just kind of a perfect draft pick. As a value pick in leagues that count faceoffs. You can get him. I think we have, you know, we like to look at our left wing lock rank of a player and compare it to the Yahoo standard average draft position. And for Lindholm, it's almost 3.5 rounds of difference.
Oh, wow.
And so I think his ADP is sitting at about 84 right now.
Okay.
Which would be kind of like a late seventh round, early eighth round pick. So we think his value is more like kind of a fifth or sixth round player. And so anytime between round six through eight, you can get some nice value out of Lindholm.
Interesting. What sort of point production do you guys have predicted for Lindholm for next year?
Let's see, for Lindholm, I can pull him up real quick.
Not to have you give away all your projections and secrets, but I just, you know, I'm just curious.
Yeah, we've got Lindholm at 31 goals and 39 assists.
Okay. All right. Good stuff there. I guess the last question here in this segment, I'm just wondering, is there one piece of advice you would give to listeners either for their upcoming drafts or just for the upcoming season in general?
Yeah, and this might sound like strange advice coming from someone who creates draft kits and sells them to people. the advice I would give is never follow a ranking system blindly. And that includes our own at Left Wing Lock. You know, if you generate your spreadsheet from our website and you see Austin Matthews ranked 5, Alex Ovechkin ranked 6, et cetera, we don't necessarily mean that you should draft those players at those exact positions.
Right.
And one of the key ideas we like to use, and I brought this up kind of a minute ago, was we like to subtract the left wing lock rank for a player and the average draft position for a player.
Okay.
And that kind of gives you an idea of what are other managers doing when they're drafting those players and what should you be doing. And so using Lindholm as an example, since we were just talking about him, if he's being taken at the end of the seventh or eighth round and Left Wing Lock or any other fantasy draft kit has him ranked in the sixth round or the fifth round, there's no point to taking Lindholm in the fifth round.
Right.
Even if it says on the Left Wing Lock draft kit, he's a fifth rounder. You know,
yeah.
You have to be aware of what other managers will be doing.
Yeah.
And that's one way to get kind of some sneaky value in a draft.
Yeah, because if you can get a guy who's ranked as a third or fourth rounder, you might as well take him in the third or fourth round, and then you can take Lindholm in rounds, you know, six or seven, right, before everyone else takes
exactly.
Him. Yeah, to try to maximize your fantasy floor. Okay, that's great. That's really insightful stuff. Thanks, Mike. Let's get into, and this is one of the big reasons we wanted to bring you on, was to talk about fantasy hockey stats and evaluating players. Sort of a, you know, fantasy hockey stats 101 sort of thing. So I guess what we're hoping to get from you is if you could explain to our listeners when you're evaluating players, you know, either in season or prior to drafting, what are some of the statistics that you really pay attention to when assessing a player?
Okay, that's a great question, and I'd like to kind of generalize it just for 1 second before I jump into any particular stat. And that's that, for me, the name of the game when evaluating players is I like to look for anomalies. You know, if, let's say your job is to just sit on this farm all day and watch horses. Okay, you just have to watch the horses out in the grass and whatever they do, sleep, stand up, run, walk, it doesn't matter, just watch them. And if you do that, you know, for 3 or 4 years, and then in year five, a zebra runs across your field while you're watching these horses. That's weird. Now, sure. You know, maybe you might check the tea you were drinking that morning to make sure nobody put anything in it. That's an anomaly, right? You're looking at horses. Every day I see horses. Every year I see horses. And then year five, oh my gosh, there's a zebra just ran across the field.
Yeah.
Something weird happened. How did that zebra get in there? Where did he come from? Why is he in amongst the horses? And so to me, that's kind of the neat thing about looking at fantasy hockey players in leading up to every season is looking for those zebras.
Okay.
Looking for guys who have statistical anomalies. And that can happen in any number of statistics. And so for, you know, just kind of to start out on this, one of the major stats that people like to use either in season or in advance of a season when evaluating a player is called PDO.
Yep.
And sometimes you may see this listed as SHSV, I think is what it's called on the NHL.com website. But those two are interchangeable just in case people have any questions about those two. And I don't think PDO actually stands for anything. And then SHSV really just stands for shooting percentage and save percentage. So there's really no good name for this stat. What it does is this stat kind of measures, it measures luck to some degree.
Yeah.
And it's measuring that luck at even strength. And so how does that tie into the horses and zebras? Well, the average value for PDO for most players along their careers is 1,000. Okay, yep. So now how do you get that 1,000? You take a player's shooting percentage, whether it be 10% or 12%, and you multiply it by 10.
Okay.
And then you take the team's save percentage with that player on the ice. Maybe the team was stopping 0.930 shots while that player was on the ice. You take that number, the save percentage at even strength, and you multiply that by 1,000. And at the end of the day, you take that 10 times the shooting percentage, 1,000 times the save percentage, add those together, and that's how you get your PDO score. And as we were saying earlier, on average for almost every player, you know, looking at a span of several years, you're going to come in around 1,000.
That's right.
For elite players may come in higher than that for multiple years at a time. But for our purposes today, just think of that number 1,000. And so the 1,000, those are the horses in the field you've been watching for 4 years. Okay.
Yep.
Now all of a sudden, a player comes by with a PDO of 1065. Okay. 1,065. And that's a zebra for us. Okay. That's a deviation from the norm. And that 1065 is actually Jared McCann's number from this past season. So Jared McCann is on Seattle now. And at least until Yanni Gourde comes back, or maybe even after Yanni Gourde comes back, Jared McCann will be the top center, top line center for Seattle. So his PDO was 1065. And so immediately that's something I jump on in the offseason when preparing these draft kits. I know this player was lucky. Whatever happened to him last year, it was he was a beneficiary of luck. And so if you break down his even strength shooting percentage, or rather the team's even strength shooting percentage while McCann is on the ice, that number comes out to be 13.5%. And the save percentage of his team while he was on the ice is 0.930. And both of those numbers on their own are very lucky numbers.
Right.
And that's an important detail about PDO. a high PDO doesn't necessarily mean that your offense was boosted. You could always get a high PDO just from having a lucky goalie on your team.
Right.
But in Jared McCann's case, at 1065, both his team's shooting percentage was high and his team's save percentage was high. And so from an offensive perspective, coming into the 2021-2022 season, you'd have to be a little bit concerned about McCann because the points he earned at even strength last season were predicated on a team that shot with 13.5% success.
Right. And mostly it's the league average is around 9%. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The league average will come in anywhere between 8.5% and 9%. Okay. And so that 13.5% is it's abnormal. And that means either his goal totals were too high last season or his assist totals were too high last season. I don't have his numbers right in front of me from last season, but I believe it was his assists at even strength that were very high.
Okay. And then would you look at secondary assist percentage as part of that? Like, does that play into part too?
That's also something I would definitely look at. And so kind of, PDO is kind of the, it's sort of the canary, right? The canary in the coal mine. You look at PDO, if it's very high or very low, you know something went wrong last season. Like something lucky happened, either good luck or bad luck. And so for me, that's kind of like just, that's kind of the warning bell. Hey, you better evaluate this player a little bit more carefully. Look for some more signals.
Okay.
And so just a few quick players that have PDOs that are either high or low from last season. McCann at 1065. The injured Jacob Verana came in at 1063.
Interesting.
And then we have two low guys. Dylan Larkin, who we spoke about a little bit earlier, his PDO was 967 last season. Again, 1,000 is kind of the baseline here. And Dylan Larkin's PDO was so low because his team only scored on 5% of the shots they took while he was on the ice. And then kind of a neat one who I hadn't really thought about until there were some transactions this summer is Cam Atkinson. For Columbus, at least when he played last year, his PDO was very low. And I think the team only scored on 7% of the shots they took. And so now Cam Atkinson's with Philadelphia and could be seeing some time on line two. There's some confusion about what line is actually line two and line three this year because Kevin Hayes is injured.
Yes.
But those are the kind of – those are four examples of players who have either high or low PDOs differing from 1,000 that you'd want to investigate a little bit more deeply.
That's really interesting. You're the second or third person now to suggest – Cam Atkinson probably is a good buy based on his value, right? Just and like you're saying, his PDO. We had Chris Wassel on a few weeks ago, and he suggested Atkinson could potentially see a 30 goal season this year. Do you buy into that, or is that maybe a bit high for your liking?
I don't know where we have Atkinson at the moment. Let me see if I can pull him up real quick. I think when you're looking at 30 goal seasons, you want to see a guy getting. First power play unit time. And right. I don't think Atkinson's going to get that in Philadelphia.
Okay. Fair enough.
So we have Atkinson coming in. We have him at 25 goals.
So not far off.
Not far off. And probably the difference there will be the power play.
Yeah.
If he can't get that power play top unit time, he's probably unlikely to reach that 30.
Okay, that's good to know. Other numbers, what else do you have for us?
Okay, so let's jump into secondary assists for a second, since you mentioned that after the PDO stuff. So with secondary assists, and I'm sure 99% of the people listening will know what this is, but I'll just be clear about this. When a team scores a goal, there can be up to two assists awarded on that goal. The guy who most recently touched the puck before the goal went in, I guess the primary, and of course the guy who maybe passed it to the guy who gets the primary assist, he ends up with a secondary assist.
Right.
And so we know a few things about secondary assists. One, there's a bit more subjectivity to it. You know, these are statisticians sitting at the rinks watching these games, and they have to decide whether or not that you know, one guy who touched the puck, did he play a role in that goal?
Right.
And there's some subjectivity to that. One thing we also know about secondary assists is that if you know a player's career value, that is the rate at which he generates secondary assists, either per game or per 60 minutes, whatever rate you want to use, if you have kind of a good baseline for that player, then any strong deviation from that baseline is suggestive that the player got lucky, or, you know, either good luck or bad luck during that season.
Right.
And so that this is another zebra we look for in the offseason. We try to find players who have secondary assist rates that are extremely deviant from their career averages.
Right. Okay.
And so one of the main guys on our list this season, going into the 2021-2022 season, is Gabriel Landeskog out of Colorado.
Okay.
I don't want to get people too bogged down in hearing numbers left and right here.
Sure.
But yeah. He's the highest guy on our list for the most lucky secondary assist rate from the previous season.
Okay.
And so what we would expect is that we would expect Landeskog's assist totals to come back down to earth a little bit in the coming season.
Okay. That's good to know.
And one way you can look at this kind of stuff, if you're interested in these secondary assists, is you can look at who a guy plays with, who his line mates are. And if his line mates had high shooting percentages, both of them, then almost always that player is going to have lucky secondary assist numbers.
That makes sense. And
we know who Landeskog played with, you know, every season. He's playing with, you know, MacKinnon and Rantanen.
Yeah.
And so when those guys have high shooting percentages, which they did last season, it leads to Landeskog getting assist at too high of a rate. And that's where we generate, you know, kind of a pullback in the coming season. Well, we don't write a lot of articles at Left Wing Lock. I'm not a natural writer myself. I'm not trained in that kind of thing. I'm not a journalist or a reporter. But when something really stands out to me, I'll throw an article up at Left Wing Lock.
Right.
And I bring this up because I believe it was in March, early March, we posted an article about James Van Riemsdyk for the Philadelphia Flyers. And I had noticed something strange about his data in the 2020-2021 season. And that said, his secondary assist rate was insanely high, like one of the highest rates I've ever seen in watching fantasy hockey.
Okay.
And again, I want to be careful here. When I say high rate, I mean compared to his typical average.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not comparing one player to another because everybody's got kind of their own baseline for this stat. But for Van Riemsdyk, his secondary assist rate was through the roof. And so I was like, I got to write an article about this. I wrote an article. I think I posted the article on Twitter once or twice. It got like one like. nobody cared. And then James Van Riemsdyk went on something like a 25-game streak where he had maybe 1 or 2 points.
Oh, wow.
And that's not me trying to pat myself on the back. That's me kind of celebrating this idea of secondary assists being a really valuable tool in fantasy hockey.
Yeah.
If you know a player's baseline rate for secondary assists and you can see that he's generating assists at a value that's very, very different from that number, you can get an advantage over your opponents. And so one of the guys on our list from last season who had very, very low secondary assist rates was Dylan Larkin for Detroit.
Okay.
And so you keep hearing me say his name in this podcast, and I don't want anybody to like – I don't want you spending your third or fourth round pick on this guy because you'll come to Maryland and try to burn down Left Wing Lock's offices or something. But I just want to say that as a very late round pick, Dylan Larkin is showing multiple signs of a guy who was very unlucky across several categories last season. And so – when you see this, when you see his PDO is low, when you see his team's shooting percentage is low, his secondary assists are low, everything just is screaming, hey, that wasn't the real Larkin. If If you want him, get him late in your draft, and you'll probably get some nice return.
That's interesting, because he's a guy that I've just never drafted for one reason or another. I just haven't, and so maybe Bruce and I will be fighting over him now in the 15th round of our drafts. that's good. Okay, that's good stuff. I'll be definitely paying attention now to secondary assists. You know, it's something that you hear the analytics community talk about a lot. Whenever a trade comes down, or whenever, you know, Tyson Berry was the example from last year, they were screaming from the rooftops that his secondary assist percentage is way too high. And now I think that makes more sense, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Very cool. What else do you have for us? Anything else you want to talk about in terms of some numbers?
Oh, yeah. So one more stat that I definitely really like is one called individual point percentage.
Okay.
And this is available on a few sites. We have it at Left Wing Lock. If you go to a player's profile page, you'll be able to see his individual point percentage. We call it IPP. And just a quick idea of how you calculate that for people who want to know. Again, this is all at even strength. So let's say a player is on the ice and his team scores a goal. You add up all of those goals that a team scores when that player is on the ice. And again, that's at even strength. So that's G. We'll call that the letter G. Then you add up all the points that the player was awarded while those goals were being scored. So if McKinnon scores a goal at even strength and Landeskog gets the assist on it, then we count that as one for Landeskog. He got a point on that particular goal.
Yeah.
And so IPP then is just you take all of those points for that player, you divide it by all the goals scored by his team, again, all that while he is on the ice, and then you just multiply it by 100 for convenience. So now that that's out of the way, the IPP values, for forwards, generally they come in around 70%. And for defensemen, they generally come in around 30%.
Right.
Again, there's some leeway there for elite players. You know, somebody like Malkin is able to maintain IPP closer to 80% over a several-year period.
Right.
So it's probably better to use a player's career average rather than those 70 and 30 baselines that I just pushed out. So what do you do with IPP? Again, zebras and horses. You're looking for guys who have IPP values that are very different from their career numbers. And it indicates that the player either got lucky or unlucky. And so I have a few of those players to bring up as you prepare for your drafts. One guy who's getting a lot of good press this offseason is Vince Dunn. So Vince Dunn spent several years in St. Louis as a defenseman. Yep. Saw a little bit of time on the power play here and there, and he's now in Seattle. And so Vince Dunn, as a defenseman, his career IPP value has been around 40%. And that's good. That's a solid number for a defenseman. But last season, Vince Dunn came in at 52%.
Oh.
So that sets off your alarm bells here. Again, IPP is an even strength metric. And so this means at even strength, Vince Dunn was being awarded points at a rate that was about 20% higher than his career average would suggest was normal.
Right.
So be a little bit careful with Vince Dunn. Another guy, and again, I'm terrible with these pronunciations, Jacob Chychrun.
I think that's right.
Okay, good. You know, when I type out these players' names sometimes when I'm making news updates, I always say it in a weird way that I'll remember how to spell it. So Chychrun is what pops in my head because that's how I know how to spell it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Jacob Chychrun. I don't have his career value offhand, but again, defensemen usually come in around 30%. Jacob Chychrun came in at 54% last season.
Right.
He was a monster in fantasy hockey leagues.
He sure was.
He was one of our targets as a value pick last summer, and he did very well for us. You may have a little trouble drafting him this season at fair value because everyone's on that Chychrun train this year.
Yeah, I would agree. He's going much higher, obviously, than he did last year. And the team itself has has taken a step back, right? I don't think you can expect, you know, a higher performance than we saw from him last season. That's without looking at some of the underlying numbers we've talked about, but I would just expect he's going to take a step back this year.
Yeah, I think so too. On the other side of the coin there, for players who had a low IPP value compared to their career norms, one interesting guy that's popping up based on where he's being used in the preseason is Jeff Skinner out of Buffalo.
Interesting.
So, you know, he spent a lot of time on the third and fourth lines in Buffalo the last year or two, and he's been a dismal performer in fantasy hockey, basically getting ignored these days. His IPP value last season was 62%. Skinner is typically in the high 70s.
Right. Yeah. So some positive regression coming, likely.
That's right. So based on Skinner's IPP and the fact that he'll probably play on a higher line this season, there could be some nice late round value if you're looking for a score. And then I like how some of these names keep popping up. You'll see overlap in some of these stats. Cam Atkinson, his IPP last season was just 62%, suggesting that he was, again, awarded points at a rate too low compared to his typical averages. And so, you know, now we've got Cam Atkinson popping up on PDO. We've got him popping up on IPP. And then we have the possibility that he could see second line time on a Philadelphia Flyers top six. So,
do you know roughly where Atkinson's IPP comes in?
For his career?
Yeah.
I have him close to 79, actually.
Okay, so for his IPP. Quite a discrepancy then.
That's right.
Okay, good. So Cam Atkinson, Dylan Larkin, a couple guys you want to keep an eye out for.
Certainly.
Okay, interesting. Anything else there you wanted to touch on before we move on to goaltenders?
I guess one last note, and I bring this up because you brought up this player a little bit earlier, and so did I when we talked about ADP for defensemen, and that's Brent Burns.
Right.
And so this ties into this notion of zone starts. So if you're somebody who likes to use that stat for fantasy hockey, I think it does have value, usually in kind of a multi-season trend sort of aspect.
Right.
And so, you know, for zone start, you're essentially looking at how frequently does a player's shift start in a particular zone. And we usually focus on the offensive zone. And so for Brent Burns, for several years, his offensive zone starts were very high. And again, we know part of that was due to him being a right wing, but as a defenseman, his zone starts were typically getting close to 55 to 60%. So that means, you know, if there was a faceoff and Brent Burns was on the ice, almost 60% of the time, that faceoff was going to be in the offensive zone.
Right.
And you know, kind of the rough idea, at least, you know, qualitatively, is that you're starting your shift closer to the goal in which you want to put the puck.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, that's if your team wins the faceoff, you now have possession, and maybe that means you might score more points. And so for Brent Burns, his zone start percentage has gone from the 60s down into the low 40s with Coach Bob Bugner. And so Bugner used to be in Florida for a bit, and then he came over and took over San Jose, I guess, two seasons ago. And Bugner is using Burns as a defensive defenseman.
Which he typically hasn't been known for.
Exactly. And, you know, the interesting thing here is tying those zone starts to Brent Burns' shot rates.
Yeah.
And so now that Bugner's using Burns in the defensive zone, he's starting just 40% of his shifts in the offensive zone. And part of it, one result of that is that his even strength shot rate over the last four seasons has declined by 50%.
Okay.
And so he's gone from, you know, this outstanding fantasy hockey production monster to a guy that you just kind of shrug now when you think about him in fantasy drafts.
So I guess just to follow that up, you don't expect to bounce back necessarily from Brent Burns. It could happen, but you're not expecting it from Brent Burns next year.
Yeah, I'm not expecting it from Brent Burns. And here's a case where you have to be a little bit careful, because I believe his IPP came in a little bit low last season compared to his typical value. So right. Normally you might say, hey, he was unlucky. But that trend of his IPP dropping is actually multi-season.
Okay.
And so now you're looking at an older player. I think he's 36 now, 35.
Yeah, he's up there. Yep.
Yeah, he's up there. And he's being used in a defensive role. His shot production is declining. His IPP is declining. When you see trends across multiple categories like that, I just say ignore. I just say run.
Yeah. You know,
it's too much risk. All the signs are saying he's declining significantly.
It's not a zebra at this point. It's a horse.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I love that analogy, by the way. That's great. Okay, good. Well, let's maybe move into goaltending then a little bit. Just, you know, some analytics that you would look at in terms of goaltenders.
Okay, so yeah, I'm very open in admitting that goaltenders are really hard to evaluate. And I think in my mind, one of the things that makes them so difficult to evaluate is the team level effects that go in to their numbers.
Right.
You know, each season you're looking at maybe somewhere close to 25 to 30% of NHL teams will have a new coach.
Yeah.
Then you're looking at somewhere between 150 to 200 NHL players will switch teams during an offseason.
And it's a lot of movement.
It's a lot of player movement. Maybe you had the coaching change as well. And so for me, that makes the goaltending position very difficult to evaluate year to year.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about a right wing who's going to play with the same line mates and he just had a down year because his shooting percentage was bad. We're talking, you know, about a guy who now has six players in front of him who were not on the team last season.
Yeah.
And maybe two or three of those guys are defensemen. Maybe the guy who is now the team's coach brought along a new goalie coach as well. To me, there are just too many team aspects that filter down to the goalies, and those things don't happen to individual skaters, or at least they don't have the same effect on individual skaters. So that's kind of my warning about goalies, is people like to say goalies are voodoo, or they use terms like that. Yeah, yep. That's fine. Whatever gives you a healthy amount of risk assessment for goalies, whatever term you want to use is great. For me, I just think it's team level effects, whether it's coaching changes or just, you know, three or four guys in front of them are now different players.
Right.
And a good example of that is, you know, in Philadelphia is the defenseman coming into the 21-22 season. You now have Ristolainen, you have Ellis, and you have Yandel. Those are three brand new guys out of six. You know, that's half your defensemen are brand new players.
Yeah.
There were some funny moments on Twitter the other day when people realized that Keith Yandel, apparently when he skates by his goalies and, you know, they calm the puck down for him behind the net, he apparently says thank you to them every single time.
Yeah.
We tweeted about that.
We said a good chuckle. Like that's funny. I've never seen or heard that before.
It is really funny. And apparently, you know, Carter Hart questioned him about it. He's like, are you telling me thank you? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, thanks. You're welcome. So it was a funny exchange, but that's just kind of a loose reminder that, hey, here's this new guy who's going to be spending maybe 15 to 17 minutes in front of Carter Hart every night for, you know, maybe 55 or 60 starts. And now they're from Philadelphia, at least there are three of those guys on the back end.
That's right.
And so all of those factors, again, I think just add a lot of uncertainty to predicting goalies. With that said, one of my favorite stats to evaluate, not really to evaluate a goalie, but kind of look for the zebra for goalies, is looking at a goalie's save percentage while his team is on the penalty kill.
Yes, you'd mentioned that.
That's right. And so I try to say this to people a lot because it's something people don't necessarily believe the first time they hear it or even the first five times they hear it. And again, yeah, I will hug this idea into my grave. Like Nobody. I don't care if it's Luongo or Brodeur or Carter Hart. Nobody's good at the penalty kill. And nobody's bad. Like, you can have stretches where you get very, very good numbers or very, very bad numbers. But you're not doing that. And the reason I know that is because when we compare that value for any goalie across multiple seasons, they can't maintain it.
Right.
They can't maintain bad numbers, and they can't maintain good numbers. And so it's important to point out what that number is. And so the league average, I think we mentioned it earlier, but I'll say it again, is 0.865 on the penalty kill.
Yep.
Now, for this upcoming season, we have a few goalies who deviated from that number severely. And it's worth pointing them out because teams will spend approximately 15% of a game on the penalty kill. And so last season, there were three goalies who had very high penalty kill save percentages. And what this means is that this means their overall save percentage was boosted by luck. And you might expect that to come as a pullback in the coming season.
Right.
And those three goalies are Philip Grubauer, Seattle, Mike Smith from Edmonton, which might make people nervous because he's now very old, at least for a hockey player.
Sure is, yeah.
39, I believe, maybe 40 in this season. And then Chicago, Marc-Andre Fleury. So those three guys had excellent seasons last year. Well, Grubauer and Fleury for sure had excellent seasons last year. I think both of those guys were up for the Vezina, if I remember correctly. And their penalty kill save percentage, all three of them were up above 90%. So up okay. above 0.900.
So you're going to see some regression then?
You're going to see some regression for those three guys, most likely. That's the most expected outcome for them in the coming season.
Interesting. Okay.
On the flip side of that, guys who had terrible penalty kill save percentages, Carter Hart, which we mentioned a little bit earlier, one of the worst values I've ever seen in 15 years of looking at fantasy hockey numbers. For a starting goalie, he was at 0.783. It's just abysmal. I mean, it's not even in the universe of NHL goalies. Like,
you just don't see that.
That's right. And then the other guy who I think is kind of an interesting case is Soros out of Nashville.
Okay.
His penalty kill save percentage was 0.822, which is also a very low number compared to the league average. And in my mind, that number actually cost him the Vezina last season.
Okay.
I don't remember if he was how he did in the voting overall, or how he was looked at or viewed by other.
I don't recall experts, either.
But if you kind of adjust his save percentage and put in a league average value for the penalty kill for him, he rates very highly last season.
Yeah, because I think in the back half of the season, he was around 930 or 935 the rest of the way. So he played really well in the second half of the season. He did not play so well in the first half, whether on the penalty kill or not. But
that also may have played a role in how people voted for sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, just adjusting that number, he's right there with Fleury and Grubauer from last season as far as overall save percentage.
Okay.
So it's interesting that what something like penalty kill save percentage can do to awards in the NHL.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting.
And again, that's a number that is completely luck-based.
Yeah. Okay. Very good to know. Any other numbers we should keep an eye on for goaltenders? Or is that kind of the main one you're going to take a look at in terms of regression?
Yeah, that's the one I'll take a look at as far as regression goes. Just for evaluating goalies in general, I like to look at kind of a 3-year even strength save percentage number.
Okay.
That sort of helps me, at least in my mind, get rid of some of the team level effects.
Right.
It's one of the reasons I was really happy with Grubauer over the years, is just because he's been able to maintain a strong even strength save percentage across multiple teams.
Right. Yeah. And it's a trend, right? Like you said, over time, it's not an anomaly. It's like he's established a trend of a good even strength save percentage.
That's exactly right. And so I still have pretty good confidence in him coming into this season for Seattle.
Okay. Good stuff. Quickly, could you tell us a bit about, you've got your possession and luck charts in your draft kits, the pluck charts, I guess you call them. Could you tell us a bit about those and how you would use them?
Sure. So we have two different types of those pluck charts. One is kind of a, what I would call a league chart. It just puts 32 data points on one chart, and it's team by team. And for that particular chart, we're looking at the possession and the luck for that team. And basically the possession stats are on the horizontal axis. We want to know, is the team out shooting their opponents, or is the team being outshot by their opponents? It's really as simple as that. And then on the vertical axis, we're looking at what you'd call PDO.
Right.
Is the team getting lucky in shooting and save percentage throughout the season? And what we know from now for probably a decade worth of data is that the teams that make it into the Stanley Cup playoffs and eventually make it to the final are found in the upper right quadrant almost always, without fail. I think I can only name two teams over the last decade that were not in that upper right quadrant. And so I like those charts because throughout the season, you can kind of see, hey, here are the teams that we think are going to make the playoffs. And you don't have to rely on points per game or, you know, seedings in the playoffs or anything like that. You can just kind of look at that quadrant. Here are the teams. These are the good teams. Now, how can you use that in fantasy hockey? To me, that's an in-season tool. And a very good example of that is last season in March, early March, the Philadelphia Flyers were in a playoff position. They held what would be the equivalent of the fourth seed in those weird divisions we had last season.
Right.
But they were a playoff team in early March. And if you were to look at their bubble, we call them bubbles on those pluck charts, they were in the upper left quadrant and they were very, very high. They were the highest team in the league on the vertical axis, meaning right. They had the highest PDO in the league. So we want to tie all those things together. Because the Flyers were on the left-hand side of the chart, they were consistently being outshot by opponents. Night in, night out, they were getting creamed. But they also had the highest PDO, and one of the driving factors of that was they had an insanely high shooting percentage as a team. I believe it was near 11% through early March.
Right, yep.
And so one of the things we did to advise our users at the website was we put this in our forum. We didn't put it in an article, but in the forum, we were telling people, hey, get rid of Carter Hart now, immediately. Like, you have to trade Carter Hart. I mean, he wasn't playing that great anyway, but the Flyers as a team were good. So he was, the Flyers as a team appeared to be good. So he was getting wins. And so we put that out there, alerting people saying you have to get rid of Carter Hart at any cost, like make a trade, get an average goalie in return. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And we knew that because the possession and luck chart told us the Flyers were a bad team. They were being outshot every night. It was going to catch up with them. And as soon as their shooting percentage dropped from high on that chart, they were going to lose so many games the rest of the way. And that's exactly what happened to the Flyers. They went from an early season playoff spot, at least up through early March, to dropping out completely. And they ended up with like a negative 38 goal differential for the season.
Wow.
I don't remember the exact years on this, but there's a very famous case. And again, the pluck chart applies here too, of the Minnesota Wild doing almost exactly the same thing.
Yep.
It was at the halfway point of the season, in regular season, so it was normal January. Minnesota Wild, they were like in first or second place. Like, they were very high in the standings. And all the Wild fans were excited. They thought this was their season. And, of course, the stats guys were all saying, no, something's very wrong here. Like, they're getting outshot every night, and their shooting percentage is very high. And so just like the Flyers last year, the Wild just plummeted the rest of the way and fell out of the playoffs before April.
I think that's when Devan Dubnyk was still in Minnesota, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so for me, that league level possession and luck chart or pluck chart is an in-season tool to decide whether or not the results you're seeing from a team are real.
Okay. Is that something that listeners can find on Left Wing Lock, or is it in the draft kit? Where would they find that?
Yeah, they can find that on the website. I should know the address on my head. It should be leftwinglock.com and then pluck charts, I believe.
Okay. Okay.
There may be a hyphen in between pluck and charts.
Okay. Good to know, though. That sounds like a very valuable tool, obviously.
Yeah. And so that's in season. I wouldn't really use that too much in preparation for a draft.
Right.
But you brought up the possession and luck charts for individual teams. And so I'll just take a moment to say something about those too.
Sure. Yeah.
So now for individual teams, what we do is, for individual teams, we have exactly the same axes. So you're going to have luck on the vertical axis. You're going to have possession on the horizontal axis.
Yeah.
And so same thing, except now the chart will, for instance, just be all Tampa Bay. So okay. You'll look at the Tampa Bay chart and you can see which players are on the ice when their team outshoots the opponents, which players are being outshot when they're on the ice. And you can also see which players are getting lucky.
Okay. So another tool to assess players.
Exactly. Exactly.
Excellent. Good stuff. Okay. Thank you very much for explaining that. I don't want to take all of your time today. So just really quickly, I want to go through our rapid fire segment. We've got some predictions for the 2021-2022 season. If Absolutely. You're good to go, we'll rip through some questions here. Who is your pick to win the Norris this year?
For the Norris, I'm going with Cale Makar. There's kind of a, strong push in the NHL where that award just goes to the guy on defense who gets the most points. Yep. And it's going to be hard to outdo Makar this year, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Your pick for the Vezina?
I've got Vasilevsky in there. It's hard for me to see somebody barring, some very high penalty kill save percentage value that bumps them up. It's hard for me to see somebody just kind of outdoing him across several categories.
Yeah, I think every guest we've asked, that's been the answer, is Andrei Vasilevsky. He's just in a category by himself, right?
He really is.
Okay. Your pick for the Hart Trophy?
Can't go with anybody, I guess, except McDavid. He's just, for me, he's just such an outstanding player, and he's usually on a team that doesn't play at an outstanding level. And so it just makes him look great. And he is great. And he'd be great on any team, but it makes him look greater.
Okay. So Connor, Dave are good. My next one here was the Rocket Richard Trophy.
We have Austin Matthews kind of in a runaway. He'll take that award by far.
Okay. I think our projection here for our podcast was 56 goals and 98 points. Do you think he'll crack 60 goals? Is that possible?
I think it's reasonable. We have him, I think our projection has him coming in at 59. So we're overlapping you right there. And, maybe just with a little bit of luck on the shooting percentage, he'll crack 60.
Okay, for sure. The Selke Trophy.
I'm going to go with Barkov in Florida. He's going to repeat and get it again this season. So.
We like Barkov for lots of reasons, actually. He's going to have a good season. Your pick for the Calder Trophy?
Calder. So I have Spencer Knight taking the Calder this year because I'm really high on Florida as a team. But I thought I heard yesterday, and this was kind of an interesting dark horse, I heard that Michael Bunting qualifies as a rookie this season. Have you heard that?
I had not heard that, but that's interesting.
It seems bizarre, and I should have double-checked a few of these things before I came on. Maybe I'll mislead people, but I believe I read that Michael Bunting, because of the number of games he's played each season and his age, that he actually still is a rookie for the coming season.
Okay.
Which would be very weird because he has a chance of producing some points in Toronto, depending on what line he may be assigned to.
Yeah, if he takes that Hyman role, he's going to have a crack at the Calder for sure, you'd think.
Yeah.
Okay, Jack Adams Trophy.
Jack Adams. So this is a bit of a homer pick here because I'm a Flyers fan, but I'm going with Alain Vigneault for the Jack Adams. And again, it's because of the way the trophy is awarded. the Jack Adams is usually given as an improvement award and not necessarily as this is the best guy in the world award. And the Flyers, I mean, if you look at the overall numbers from last season, they just look terrible. Minus 38 goal differential. They were terrible in their own division, not a playoff team. And I think all of those things will turn around and then he'll get the credit.
Okay. Your winner for the Pacific Division.
I've got Vegas Golden Knights.
Okay. Metropolitan Division.
Metro, I have a kind of a toss-up here between Carolina and Philadelphia.
Okay, interesting. So you're high on Philadelphia then for this coming year, obviously with the Jack Adams Trophy. And I think we had a couple guys on the podcast. Tyler was one of them for sure. And I think, Bruce, you were as well.
Yep.
We're high on Philadelphia for this year.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a nice turnaround with that team.
Okay. Central Division.
In the Central, we're going back with Colorado.
Okay, no surprise there. The Atlantic.
And then the Atlantic, I'm going Florida Panthers.
I should have guessed that one, actually. Your pick to win the President's Trophy.
I have Colorado edging out Florida for the President's.
Okay. And your Stanley Cup final matchup.
I just went boring based on the point predictions, and I'm going Florida versus Colorado for the matchup. And then I'm going to let Joe Quenneville get a cup here and say that Florida is going to take it.
Okay. Yeah, we've heard that one a couple of times now. I think Colorado, Florida is a cup final. So that's a matchup I think everybody would love to see. That would just be maybe exciting to watch.
I mean, I thought Florida-Tampa was a great series last year in round one. Florida eventually had some goaltending problems. But as far as like skaters against skaters, it was really nice hockey to watch. And then from the Western end, I thought last season was their year.
Yeah.
I thought everything just lined up perfectly for them during the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, we write about this in the draft kit. I may have been a little bit harsh on Kadri, but, I just think he's now done this three times, right? Three times in the playoffs, he has cost his teams a significant series. Twice in Toronto and once for Colorado now.
Yeah, how many more times do you give him a pass, right?
It's really tough situation. I for me, last year just felt like Colorado all the way.
Okay. I think I know the answer already, but favorite NHL team?
Oh, yeah. Philadelphia Flyers, yeah.
Okay. And then final question here. Will Alex Ovechkin break Wayne Gretzky's scoring record?
I believe Ovechkin will break that record. It wouldn't shock me if he needs one extra season at like the league minimum just to get it done. But I think one way or another, Ovechkin's going to take that record.
That's kind of been the consensus from the people that we've talked to as well. So, you know what? It'd be really interesting to see. I think it'd be good for hockey to see a major record be broken. I wouldn't doubt Ovi for a second because it's just the way he plays. He doesn't have to be extremely mobile to score those goals, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, he'll be 36 coming into this season, and he's still averaging over four shots per game, which is just an insane amount of shots.
Huge volume.
You can't do anything but score goals if you take that many shots.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be good to go for quite some time.
Okay.
And for me, he's such a likable player. I don't know. Maybe I've rose color glasses on just for Ovechkin or something. But I just think, you know, there are players you can watch and maybe you like them, maybe you root a little bit for them, or maybe you hate them. You know, for me, Sidney Crosby is my mortal enemy for life. I'll admit that he's one of the greatest players ever. But if I see his grandson on the road when I'm 80 years old, I'm knocking his ice cream cone out of his hand. Like, I just don't, the Crosbys are my enemy. But, Ovechkin,
that's awesome.
For some reason, that guy is just – I love Ovechkin. I mean, I don't want the Capitals ever to win. I want the Flyers to beat them every night. But he's a guy I can root for whatever reason. He's just – he's likable. When he holds the Stanley Cup and he has four teeth, I smile.
Yeah.
And so if he breaks the record, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, I don't think anyone likes scoring goals more than Ovechkin does. And I, too, was very happy to see him lift the cup finally. He was so excited. It was just like pure joy in his face. It was great to see.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll leave it there. Mike, thank you so much for your time today. You've been very generous with your time. Yeah, no, for sure. A lot of great information here. I'm really excited to get this out to our listeners. I think they'll enjoy it. Bruce, any other questions before we sign off here?
No, you got covered them all off for me.
Okay, awesome. All right, Mike, well, thank you very much. Enjoy the season and good luck with everything.
All right, thank you very much for having me again. Good to meet you guys.
Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Take care.